This is Movies for the Blind, Episode 27, The Last Man on Earth, Part 2.
Everything's going to be all right.
Hello and welcome to Movies for the Blind, where you can enjoy films without looking at a screen. I'm Valerie Hunter. We continue with The Last Man on Earth, who in this case is being played by Vincent Price. While he did get to play roles like Oscar Wilde, Brigham Young, Egghead on Batman, of course he was best known for horror, starting out with being killed by Boris Karloff in Tower of London in 1939. But even within the realm of the macabre, he was in an amazing range of projects, from the works of Edgar Allan Poe to Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein, from House of Wax to a voice on Alice Cooper and Michael Jackson albums, and the creator of Edward Scissorhands, his final major role. And then there's this role, Dr. Robert Morgan, a relatively normal guy, which is his problem. He's the survivor of a worldwide plague, fighting off the only other people he ever sees, plague victims who have risen from the grave to become zombie-like vampires. When we left him, he was in the middle of a flashback, remembering his best friend Ben, who became one of the vampires now assaulting his house every night, his little daughter, Kathy, showing major symptoms of the plague, and his beloved wife, Virginia, or Virge, who herself has started to weaken. So, let's find out what more he remembers, and what's next for him in the present, in the conclusion of The Last Man on Earth. That night, Robert drives home and finds an army truck in front of his house, just closing its rear door. He rushes out of the car.
All right, let's roll.
And watches the truck drive off. Very concerned, he hurries to the house, where Virge sits in a chair, staring into space. Robert drops his hat on a table and closes the door, then notices her. He runs into Kathy's room. Only a stuffed animal lies on the bed. Anguished, he returns to the living room and approaches Virge.
When?
He falls to his knees beside her.
When?
I called the doctor. I had to.
I told you not to call anyone.
Mom, she was blind. She couldn't see. She kept reaching out her hands, groping for me. And then, all of a sudden, she was gone.
He stands slowly.
And they came and I tried to stop them. They took her.
I saw a truck out there. Was that it?
Was it?
She turns away. He rushes out of the house. Later, as fires burn in the pit, soldiers feed new victims into it.
I'm sorry, lady. Nothing I can do.
Let that truck through. Get out of the way. Get back, folks.
Military police hold back crowds of people from claiming their loved ones.
All of you.
Robert pulls up nearby.
Good shot there. Move. Move along.
Getting out of the station wagon, he runs ahead of one of the many army trucks.
This way.
He ducks past a barrier.
Hey, you, mister!
And gets past the police. One of the trucks stops at the edge of the pit. As a soldier steps out wearing a gas mask, Robert catches up with him.
Did this truck just come in from Market Street? I said, did this truck just come in from Market Street?
Mister, I don't know.
He walks off, leaving Robert frustrated and searching. He spots another group of soldiers throwing a body bag into the pit. And he runs to their truck as they bring out a smaller body bag. He reaches for it.
Hey, you don't belong in here. Get out.
A policeman restrains him.
I said get out.
I want my daughter.
Mister, a lot of daughters are in there, including my own.
Robert watches the small body bag tumble down into the pit, among dozens of flaming bags. Finally, he staggers away. Another day, the wind blows across the roads and around the Morgan house. in the kitchen. Robert opens a package and prepares to empty the substance inside into a bowl.
Bob! Bob, I can't see! I can't see!
He runs to the bedroom.
Bob!
And bursts in.
Bird!
He slowly approaches the bed, where Verge lies face down. He turns her over and kneels before her limp body. Desperately, he takes her hand.
Verge.
Then lowers his head. Later, he looks out the window at the wind, throwing the curtain down. He steps to the bed, where he's laid Verge face up on some pillows, her arms folded. He shakes his head.
No. I won't let them put you there, Verge. I promise. I won't let them put you there.
Soon after, he carries her body, wrapped in a blanket, out of the house. The passenger door of the station wagon is open. With Verge in his arms, he approaches it and gently sets her down in the passenger seat. He drives, glancing at her solemnly. As he stays alert for anyone who could catch him, he takes a side road away from the city. He stops the car at a dried bush and gets out of the car in an open field. Reaching into the back seat, he pulls out a shovel, then looks around as he walks past the car. Later, a grave has been dug. Robert steps into it with the shrouded body of his wife. He bends and lays her down. Standing, he takes a long look at her. Then he climbs out of the grave. Gazing down again at the body, he takes hold of the shovel. He begins to fill the grave. That night, at home, he pours himself a drink. As he picks it up, he looks around and sets down the drink. He steps to the window and looks past the curtain. He finds nothing unusual, but keeps listening. Stepping away from the window, he follows the voice to the front door. The doorknob turns.
Who is it? Who's there?
Robert reaches for the doorknob and opens the door to find a figure which approaches him. It's Verge! He gapes at her as she stalks toward him, hands up and mouth open. He backs away, mortified. Robert's memories fade as he stands in his living room 3 years later, with Ben and his fellow vampires still swinging their pieces of wood. He shakes his head. Well, outside.
Morgan! We're going to kill you, Morgan!
Ben beats on the station wagon as the other vampires help wreck it.
Morgan!
Trying to force away the memories and the noise, Morgan. Robert paces with his hands thrust into his jacket pockets.
Do you hear, Morgan? Morgan! Do you hear, Morgan?
Glancing forlornly at the boarded up window, he keeps pacing. Another day arrives, with more corpses in the yard and someone staggering off. In the bedroom, the alarm clock reads 5:45. Lying in bed with his clothes, Robert wakes up. He rolls himself over to look at the clock. Staring at the ceiling for a moment, he pushes himself out of bed and leaves the bedroom. Soon after, he steps out of the house and looks over the night's carnage. He approaches the demolished car.
If Cortman thinks he can get to me by destroying my car, his wits are getting dull.
Later, in a new car showroom, he browses.
This convertible would be nice. Probably handles well. But I can't think of comforts. There was a time when I shopped for a car. Now I'm looking for a hearse. This station wagon will have to do.
He opens the driver's door. And soon after, he drives his new station wagon home. He parks it in the garage. Getting out of the car, he steps to the garage doors to close them, but pauses when he notices something small coming down the street. A little dog. The black poodle heads up his front walk, amazing him. When Robert starts toward the dog, it runs off.
Alive. It's alive.
As it keeps running, Robert hurries to the street.
Wait. Don't run away. Come back here. Don't run away.
But it gets too far for him to chase. Starting up a hill.
Come back. Come back here.
When it disappears over the crest of the hill, Robert follows.
Wherever he is, I've got to find him. If I have to search every street, every house, every alley, every inch of this town, I've got to find it.
Later, among corpses on a wide set of stairs...
Come back!
He scans the area.
Hey, boy, where are you?
Descending the stairs, he continues searching the streets.
Where are you, pal? Come here!
He walks past an abandoned car and soon finds himself on the crest of another hill. Looking around at the empty streets below him, quickly he walks down the hill and then runs across an intersection. He finds no sign of the dog, but he does spot impaled vampires in a park. He walks to where they lay with long spears sticking out of them.
They're dead. They've been staked.
He struggles to pull out one of the spears. Then studies the tip.
But these are made of iron. That's wood. That's mine.
He looks around.
Someone else is alive in this world. But where are they? Where are they hiding?
He walks away with the spear, which he holds later at home.
How many are there?
He puts it down.
Where did they come from? Why haven't I seen them?
Stepping to the radio, he turns it on and picks up his microphone.
This is Robert Morgan. If somebody can hear me, answer me.
For God's sake, answer me.
He switches it to receive.
This is KOKW calling. KOKW calling. Answer me.
Turning off the radio, he turns to the window and spots the dog resting on the ground outside. He smiles, relieved. He removes the bar from the front door. Then he opens it, beaming, and steps out to the dog.
So you finally decided to come back.
When he pets it, he gets dirt and hair on his hand.
Good boy. Oh, no. Don't worry, boy.
He picks up the dog.
You're going to be all right. Yes, you are.
Backing through the front door, he closes it. Later, as the vampires approach outside, Robert carries the dog from the kitchen.
There, now we've got you all cleaned up. You're going to feel better. I'm going to put you down here now and you can rest. Get you all cleaned up.
He lays it on the couch. But the noise makes it jump off and retreat to a corner. Robert turns to the window as Ben swings his piece of wood outside. Robert approaches the dog beside the lathe.
You know they're out there, don't you? You poor, driven thing.
Bending down, he sits next to it on the floor.
Everything's gonna be all right. Nobody's gonna hurt you. Everything's gonna be all right. All right. You're going to get better. We're gonna have lots of happy times together.
He pets its head.
You'll see, everything's going to be fine.
When more hair comes off in his hand, Robert's smile fades. He gets to his feet and studies the hair. Thinking, he steps away, glancing back at the dog. Soon after, he looks at the hair under a microscope and finds the plague germs. He laughs wearily. Later, beside a small body bag impaled by a wooden stake, Robert digs a small grave in a park. He puts the body inside, shaking his head. He starts to fill the grave. When he's finished, he tamps it down. Glancing up, he happens to notice someone in the distance walking toward him. It's a woman in a long skirt and carrying a jacket. She stops when she sees him. Amazed, he puts down the shovel, and she runs off.
Wait, I'm not gonna hurt you, can't you understand? Wait!
He chases her past the sparse trees of the park. Glancing back at him, she slows and almost stumbles, but gets past another tree as he closes the gap. He catches up and grabs her.
Wait!
She wrestles away and runs.
I'm not going to hurt you! Wait! Wait!
He gets a hold of her again, and she struggles.
I couldn't be out here in the daylight if I was one of them. You know that they can't come out until sundown.
She stops struggling.
Do you want to come with me or do you want to face them?
She pushes his hand from her arm and stands her ground. He steps away. Stopping, he looks back at her, and she looks back. She walks toward him, and he leads her away. Later, in the kitchen, Robert pours coffee into a serving pot. The woman wanders around the living room. Robert listens to her movements. In the bedroom, she rummages through a clothes drawer. She picks up a black sweater and holds it up to herself. In the kitchen, Robert picks up the serving pot and cups on a tray, while the woman returns to the living room wearing the sweater and looking around cautiously. She watches Robert step out of the kitchen with the serving pot, and he watches her.
You feeling better?
Yes.
Would you like a cup of coffee?
Thank you.
He pours a cup as she sits down at the dining table. Sitting across from her, he prepares to pour himself a cup.
You seem very well organized here.
Yeah.
My name is Ruth Collins. I was married. I lost my husband. You are alone?
He nods.
You were married?
Yes.
Children?
A daughter.
He suddenly gets up from the table and goes to the kitchen, where he picks up a wreath of garlic. He carries it to the dining table and holds it up, startling her for a moment. She stands.
What are you doing?
He steps toward her and she backs up. He shoves the garlic at her.
Please stop, please. Stop it, please. You're making me sick.
Why do you turn
please.
Away? Why do you turn away?
She escapes to the couch, coughing. He tosses the garlic away.
You are infected.
No.
He approaches her.
Infected systems are allergic to garlic.
You think I'm one of them?
You will be.
You've made up your mind just because I...
You can't change the facts by talking.
Facts? What facts? That I got sick? I've had a sensitive stomach all my life. I saw my husband killed, torn to pieces right in front of our house. I've been wandering ever since, hiding at night, not eating more than scraps, sick with mourning, sick with fear, unable to sleep. Then you shout at me. You chased me across the field, hit me, dragged me to this house. And to top it all, when I get sick because you shove a piece of reeky garlic in my face, you tell me I'm infected.
When she starts to leave, he grabs her arm.
Where are
Let
you
me
going?
Go.
You can't go out there. It's almost sunset.
Let me go,
you
I
can't
said.
Go out there now. In a few minutes,
care.
The streets will be full
let
up.
Let go.
She struggles.
And please, let
care.
Me give you a blood test.
She pushes away.
Don't touch me. Don't touch me. Don't touch me.
She slumps onto the couch and holds her head in her hands.
You must be hungry. I'll fix you some dinner.
As he goes to the kitchen, Ruth touches her throat, laboring to breathe. Ben and his fellow vampires begin their ritual outside. Later, during dinner...
You know, you should eat.
I can't.
She leaves the table and wanders around the living room. He follows with his hands in his pockets.
You seem used to them.
Oh, as much as anybody could be. I'm not frightened of them anymore, if that's what you mean. Oh, I protect myself against them, but only because there's so many. Individually, they're weak, mentally incompetent, like animals after a long famine. If they weren't, they surely would have found a way of breaking in here a long time ago.
Come out, Morgan!
Hear that? That's Ben Cortman. He was my friend.
Your friend?
He was like a kid brother. If I could find him and destroy him.
But you said he was your friend.
When I find him, I'll drive a stake through him, just like all the others.
As she smokes one of his cigarettes, he sits down.
But you lived through all this. Do you know why?
Perhaps I was chosen. That's a laugh. Or perhaps it's because a long time ago when I worked in Panama, I was bitten in my sleep by a bat. My theory is that the bat had previously acquired the vampire germ. By the time it entered my blood, it had been strained and weakened by the bat system. As a result, I have immunity. Well, it's only a guess, but it's all I have to go on.
You don't think that I'm immune, do you?
It's a simple matter to find out whether you are or not.
Ben keeps beating at the house.
What will you do if I am infected? Cure me? You don't have to answer. I know as well as you do. It's incurable.
There might be a way. If not of killing the germ, at least of containing it, keeping it from spreading. If I had the equipment, the time.
But you don't.
She walks away. In the bedroom, she leans against the door. Leaning on an overturned chair, she struggles to breathe. She sees herself in a mirror and turns away. Robert hears her. She reaches into her skirt's waistband and pulls something out. When Robert goes to the bedroom, he finds her about to inject herself with a syringe. She covers it up to cry. But he steps up to her and turns her around, making her drop it.
You are one of them.
I was. Without that injection, I'll be one again.
What do you mean? You found a solution?
That's right. Exactly as you said it could be.
She picks up the syringe.
I take that for it.
What is it?
Defibrinated blood plus vaccine. The blood feeds the germ. The vaccine keeps it isolated and prevents it from multiplying. We've had it for some time now.
We?
There are quite a number of us.
And I thought you were alone. I was going to cure you. Does that amuse you?
No.
Now, I want the truth. I want all of it. Why are you here?
To find out if you know any more than we do. You know, far less. We're alive. Infected, yes, but alive. We're going to reorganize society. Do away with all those wretched creatures who are neither alive nor dead. Start everything all over again.
And you want me to join?
You can't join us. You're a monster to them. Why do you think I ran when I saw you? Even though I was assigned to spy on you. Because I was so terrified what I'd heard about you. You're a legend in the city, moving by day instead of night. Leaving as evidence of your existence bloodless corpses. Many of the people you destroyed were still alive. Many of them were loved ones of the people in my group.
I didn't know.
Is there any way you can get out of here?
What do you mean?
They're coming after you tonight. That's why I was sent here. To prevent you from resisting them. I'm supposed to keep you here.
She pulls out a pistol.
Until they come.
To kill me?
Yes.
Your new society sounds charming.
The beginning of any society is never charming or gentle.
And you pretended to be shocked at my violence. Well, what are you waiting for? Why don't you go on and use it? Get it over with. Use it. Get it over with.
She drops it on the bed.
Now you know. What are you going to do?
Coughing, she collapses onto the bed. Robert watches her, thinking. He picks up the gun. Still watching her, he slowly leaves the room. In the living room, he thinks deeply about what he now knows. Stepping past the map of his hunting excursions, he picks up one of his wooden stakes and considers it. Later, Ruth lies unconscious on the couch with an IV in her arm. Robert makes an adjustment to the flow in the tube which connects her to an IV in his arm as he sits in a chair nearby. Finished, he removes his needle. Setting down his equipment, he reaches Ruth and removes the needle from her arm. She opens her eyes.
What are you doing?
It's already done.
What?
As she looks down at the needle mark, he stands up and gets a mirror.
Look.
She turns away from it.
Look.
Hesitantly, she faces the mirror and finds herself able to keep looking into it.
You see? It worked, Ruth. The antibodies in my blood worked. My blood has saved you, Ruth. Do you know what this means? You and I can save all the others. We won't be alone. We'll never be alone again.
You are sure?
Wait.
He walks away as she feels her arm and her face overwhelmed. He returns with the garlic that had sickened her before. She looks at it nervously, but he smiles.
Don't be afraid.
She accepts the garlic and breathes it in. She holds it against her face. Smelling it gratefully, her face soon fills with dread. She starts to run away, but he blocks her.
Where are you going?
I'll get out of here. Tell him not a threat to us.
You can't go out there. You will get 10 feet.
When they come here, there won't be time for questions and answers. They'll come to kill. For God's sake, Robert, let me go. Oh, Robert, please.
Ruth, look, tomorrow.
They sit.
Please. Oh, Robert.
Tomorrow, Ruth. Tomorrow will be all right.
Robert, no.
Outside, Ben reaches for the front door, feeling around it. Inside, Ruth cries, holding Robert's hand in hers.
Robert.
Yes, ma'am.
But if that doesn't last.
But it will. I've already checked it under the microscope. Wait, I'll show you. I'll prove it to you. I'll check it again.
As he goes to the kitchen, Ben throws something at the door. Robert proudly sets the microscope on the kitchen table, while Ruth remains on the couch holding the mirror and relaxes back. Meanwhile, Ben is able to open the door in the kitchen.
Ruth, just take a look at this. This'll prove it to you.
He leaves the kitchen.
Ruth, there's no change. I've double-checked.
She's gone. He runs out to where Ben pins Ruth to a wall, attacking her.
Get away from her!
He pulls Ben off her neck as she collapses.
Ruth, are you all right? Are you all right?
Ben strains to recover nearby. All of them turn to the sound of jeeps racing up the street. A female vampire wanders some distance in front of them.
Ben!
The jeeps are full of people wearing black, with others running beside them.
Ben! It's time to kill you, Robert!
Ruth's fellow survivors stop at the house and run from their jeeps, armed with flashlights and spears. Another jeep rolls up the driveway as they start attacking the vampires. Ben watches and sneaks away.
Run! Run!
Vampires are impaled, and a group of them are back toward the garage. Robert watches as several survivors raise their spears. Robert creeps away from them along a wall of the house as Ruth stands. Robert hides in the shadows. While more vampires are killed in the street, Ben walks along a roof of a tall building nearby.
Up there!
A survivor with a rifle spots him. Ben raises his arms against a spotlight. The survivor aims at him. Hit in the chest, Ben falls off the building. The spotlight finds Robert.
There he is!
He runs.
Wait! You don't understand, wait!
As the vampire slaughter continues.
Get him!
Robert runs down a side street. Armed survivors start chasing him. He hurries around the back of the building where Ben had been, and survivors run to the jeeps.
Wait!
Ruth runs after them, but the survivors race off in jeeps and on foot. Robert checks around a corner of the building.
Run up!
When he hears the jeeps coming, Robert runs in the other direction and ducks behind some bushes. The jeeps speed past him, but survivors on foot search around the building.
This way! Hey, over here! This way! Cover outside!
When they go around the other side, Robert comes out from behind the bushes. He spots a police station across the street. He runs to it, pulling out Ruth's gun. He fires it at the jeeps that approach and runs inside. Survivors swarm the entrance. As they start running inside, Robert rushes up some stairs, shooting the survivor in front. The rest keep up the chase as Robert runs into a hallway. He looks back at an armed survivor at the top of the stairs and shoots him. Robert finds the armory. He forces the door open and locks it behind him. As the survivors reach the hall, Robert swings a chair and breaks the glass of a gun case. He stuffs bombs into a pouch as survivors get to the armory door. Robert opens another door.
Stand back!
A survivor shoots the lock off the door. Outside, Robert creeps along a ledge, while survivors burst into the armory to find him gone, but run to the other door. Robert climbs into the next building. The chasing survivors run back down the hall. In the next building, Robert runs up more stairs. He gets to the top, dodging fire from a survivor below, and runs across the roof. Pulling out a bomb, he throws it and runs on. Survivors run up the stairs. They reach the roof, which is covered in smoke from the bomb, and fire through it. Robert drops another smoke bomb in a doorway of the next building and runs down some stairs. Survivors struggle through the smoke and follow. Throwing another smoke bomb, Robert escapes the building. Soon after, he runs toward the church. The survivors follow.
There he is, in the church.
Heading up the stairs, He throws more smoke bombs behind him. Jeeps arrive, and survivors pour out of them. They fight through the smoke. One of them shoots Robert. He staggers into the doorway, then backs inside. Doubled over, he stumbles down the long, wide aisle. The survivors run into the church. Robert struggles into a hall on the side. Rifles ready, the survivors stalk along both sides of the aisle, searching. Holding the wound in his midriff, he ducks into an alcove to hide. More survivors run into the church from all sides. They pass the alcove. Female survivors make their way through the smoke on the stairs out front. The male survivors run through the church. As the women start down the aisle, some of them with children, staggering out of the alcove, still doubled over, Robert returns to the main area in front of the pews. The women and children back away as he stumbles across. Checking around a corner, he retreats to the center again as survivors come out that way. He sees more armed survivors converging from the other side and backs toward the altar. In front of it, he turns to the survivors surrounding him. Outside, Ruth runs up the stairs. At the altar,
all of you. All of you freaks. Mutation.
They raise their spears. And one impales him. Ruth runs down the aisle.
Hold it. You're freaks. I'm a man. The last man.
He falls onto his back. Ruth runs to him.
Robert.
She holds his head.
They were afraid of me. They were afraid of me. They were afraid of me.
I didn't know.
He dies. Ruth stands and slowly walks away. Glancing back at him, she continues on toward her fellow survivors. Then she walks past the women and children, up the aisle. The End. Described for Movies for the Blind. An American International Picture. And that was The Last Man on Earth. As you might have gotten the idea from all the Italian names in the opening credits last time, this film was shot in Rome. While Ruth was played by Franca Bedoya, her voice was by Carolyn de Fonseca, an American who moved to Rome to become an actress and ended up becoming one of the most popular voice dubbing artists, performing in dozens of European films needing English speakers for English language versions. But we're heading back to the U.S. of A. to hang out with as American a gal as you could get in the 1940s, Betty Hutton.
Tom, I want to do something for a young lady, something in a financial way.
Financial, huh? Blonde or brunette?
Blonde.
Judy Peabody.
Where can I find you?
I work at the Stork Club.
You see, the Stork Club is the mecca for celebrities from all over the world. They come here to eat, see, and be seen.
I fell in the ocean and she saved me life.
Do you need any help?
For pennies.
So now you're feeling generous, huh?
Very. I want to make her life beautiful.
Why, of course, Miss Peabody. It's a pleasure to welcome you to Lux.
Then everything's all right?
Perfectly in order.
She's not under any circumstances to know it comes from me. She thinks she saved a poor man.
Gwen, it's got me down. I can't stand it. All this is enough to drive me out of my mind.
Providence works its wonders in mysterious ways.
Providence doesn't go around opening charge accounts for hat check girls.
To Judy, who works at the Stork Club and whose wants are small. I wonder.
That's The Stork Club, next time on Movies for the Blind. For more information and links about the movies, about description, and how to subscribe, check the blog, moviesfortheblind.com, where you can also find out about this podcast's Creative Commons license. The movies are from the Internet Archive, which is also the host for this podcast, so please support universal access to human knowledge by visiting and donating at www.archive.org. Thank you for downloading and for listening. Be back next week. Take care.